Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host of Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Today, we're going to have on with us Jeffrey Deskovic and Leslie Robinson. Jeffrey Deskovic was an individual who was charged and sentenced to prison for many years for a crime he did not commit. When he came out, he got his master's in criminal justice and he became a lawyer. And he and Leslie Robinson, who also, Leslie Robinson, created a program that helps with those who have come out of prison and helps with prevention of crime. And the two of them will be on with us today to talk about the things that they've been doing, and they have been doing a mighty fine job. But what I'd like to talk about before we get started is I am a person that networks. I network with advocates around the country. And the reason for networking is because you meet a lot of people who, like yourself, are out there trying to make a difference. There are advocates who have been around for years who share things, because we know by sharing with those that we meet across the country who are doing the same thing we're doing, that we're actually making a difference nationwide and not just by state, because we know we have state prisons and we know we have different governors, and we know that the decisions about these organizations, these facilities, are all different, even though the problems are the same. Now, I have joined quite a few of the groups on Facebook, and we have had psychosocial therapists on our show, and actually, Leslie Robinson today is a psychosocial therapist as well, and I have interviewed Marion Jacobs from the Netherlands, a psychosocial therapist for many years. I have been sharing a lot of these things that are discussed about the mental illnesses caused not only prior to prison, but once being placed in prison. And these things that have been posted on Facebook have been to share so people can gain from it. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people on Facebook who have started groups, and they have denied or declined some of the postings that have gone up that their members are interested in, but yet the group leader, the administrator, sometimes denies. There is the Alternatives to Criminalization of Mental Health for Our Youth that have denied or declined postings that have gone up pertaining to mental health of the youth. There's a criminal justice advocacy for mentally ill who have declined at times postings. There's a group recently out of Boston, Massachusetts, who was interviewed by the Boston Herald. And the organization, regardless of culture, are doing a fine job. They have prevented many, many incidences in Massachusetts and crime. And the name of the group is the 10,000 Fearless Peacemakers. And they are of Muslim faith. And apparently some of these postings have been declined. We have to stop this discrimination in the United States of America, because we as advocates are all working towards the same goals, and that is criminal justice reform, regardless of the religion or race, regardless of the gender or age. We are all in this together. And by declining postings because of the administrator's personal or self-motivation is not helping the people that are joining the group. And I have been referring a lot of individuals to the groups that I have joined. And unfortunately, some of these groups are the groups that have declined postings from others who have joined. And I just want to bring that out. Now, we are going to bring on with us Leslie Robinson and Jeffrey Deskovic. And they are going to talk about the magnificent work that they have been doing. And many of you are familiar with Jeffrey already. And I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with Leslie from being on with us before. But I want to welcome them so that they can discuss the things that they have been doing in partnership and individually. So, Leslie, are you on with us?
I sure am. Hello.
Hello. I want to welcome you. It's been an honor to have you on again with us. And
great.
I'm looking forward to hearing what you and Jeffrey have to say. Is Jeffrey on with us? Okay, he was a minute ago. He dropped. I don't know if he dropped purposely or if he is dropping because of the station itself. But Leslie, why don't you start while we're waiting for Jeffrey to come on? Why don't you start with the work that you've been doing and how you and Jeffrey became partners in some of these programs and activities that you're doing?
Yeah, I would love to. Thank you. Great to be here. Hi, everybody. So about 35 years ago, I did a two-year poetry project at Rikers Island. That's how I got started in reentry. And I went every 2 weeks and kicked poetry with 50 to 100 women at a time. And it was incredibly powerful and healing. And the need was just so immense and was able to be met in such beautiful ways that I just really was moved to get involved in this area, because especially 35 years ago, it was the lock 'em up time when everybody just figured, you know, whoever was incarcerated was a bad person and nobody even thought about it and went about their business. Well, we have a lot more consciousness now, even though unfortunately too many people are still on that track. But I learned through direct experience that that was so false and so tragic. And many years later, I started creating healing communication board games and card decks, and I created one for prison reentry. And I met Jeff. Jeff, are you on? And I met Jeff.
He hasn't come back on yet, but he probably will. It's just there was two Leslie Robinsons on, and I thought maybe he was on that same line, but his link did show up, so he was on. He will probably come back on in a few minutes.
Okay. I'll text him in a few minutes if we don't tell him to just come back on. So I met Jeff at a restorative justice conference upstate New York, and it's a long story, but I ended up showing him the game. He played it. He played it with his family and with his friends. The word game does not really qualify what it is. It's very deep and moving questions that everybody can answer and share and have conversations they'd never have otherwise with one another in the form of a game. You know, you roll a dice, the card comes up, the questions are on the card. So he loved it, and he had some money, and he partnered with me and financed the game. And since then, it's being used in about 300 prisons and jails nationally for tens of thousands of incarcerated people in groups. And then I'm very excited that recently I launched. Am I able to show a testimonial, or this is only people can't see?
No, you can't see it. But you know what? Yeah. There is a way that I can try this another time. But what I was going to say is when I saw games, I assumed, well, it's, you know, what is this all about, games? But when I started reading it and seeing all the things that you do and, you know, the help that you've done through this so-called game program that you talk about, it was amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm a therapist. I was a social worker for 35 years in underserved and marginalized communities, working in homeless shelters with schizophrenic adult males and runaway shelters, runaway and homeless youth, and for 6 years put creative arts programs in failing inner city schools on and on. So I learned very deeply. I'm a white, you can't see me, but I'm a white person, and it just really clued me into the terrible circumstances and lack of opportunity and education. And you know, when your heart is touched and moved and you're working directly with so many people, you can't help but you can't turn away. And so I created these games because I never had anybody to talk to about real stuff when I was younger, and I had a whole lot going on in my household and mental illness and violence and all kind of things, and nobody ever to come close to talking about it with. So I started creating these games where these conversations are able to come up in a really engaging, gentle way where everyone answers the same questions. So people who are really acting tough or really having masks, they're compelled almost to share because that hurt is in all of us, and the need for understanding and the need to be seen, even if it's layered over, is still there. So these games fulfill that opportunity.
You're right. You know, that's what I was just talking about. This group that's in Boston that we're interviewed, they're not focused on just preventing crime with their own culture. They're trying to help all cultures, and they have succeeded. They have succeeded in the work that they've been doing. They, you know, they've gotten acknowledgement. And this is what you're doing. And as you say, regardless of the race, regardless of the gender, age, whatever it might be, and you and Jeffrey, I mean, so amazing. I couldn't put down when I was doing the introductory bio, I couldn't put down what you and Jeffrey are doing because you're both doing so much.
Yeah.
So
we're
that's
pretty driven.
Yeah. Honestly.
Yeah. I mean, do you want me to text him for him to come on? Because it doesn't, unless he had an emergency.
Well, I was just thinking he may have had a call or something when he came on because he was on for a while and then he dropped and then he probably had a call, but you can't text him. But I want you to, you know, just talk about, as you said, you've been bringing these things, these games into the prisons, and tell us more about that.
So I actually 5 months ago launched a new video visitation version, family version, that's different from the peer-to-peer version that's in all these prisons. And that's being used by about 1,200 people a month. It's a video visitation game, so they can click on the link, and there's all kind of questions about the family to help different family issues. There's also funny stuff, so it's another reiteration of it, and that's super exciting. Hoping to get that into many more places. It's a little bit tricky because most of the communication companies charge so much money, and the NCIC, who actually licensed this from me, are putting it on for free, and people can get on and use it for up to 15 minutes for free. So
let me ask you, Leslie, now is this is done in the prisons, but do you do this as well in the communities? Or with
I don't have time right now to do that because I'm actually just about to launch in about a month or two a new game that I've been working around the clock on called Remembrance for people to help them process loss together with one another. So for everybody listening, in about 3 weeks, that's going to be up on the website, remembrance.love. And I've been working very, very hard on this. I know a lot of us are dealing with loss of loved ones, or even if it was decades ago, still struggling with all kind of issues that we don't know how to talk about. So just a long answer. Let me backtrack to what you're asking me. So that's going to be ready to launch very soon and very necessary, because unfortunately there's almost nothing interactive out in the world around loss and grief and death. So, you know, I'm a one person, it's only me, and I have a therapy practice, and I usually work about 15 hours a day, 6 days a week, so I don't have time right now. If anybody wants to use this in the community, I would be happy to allow them to have the link for free. So if we give out contact information, do you want me to do that now or towards the end of this, Leona?
Well, you can do both. I also wanted you to give your information, so you can give your information, everything you want to get out there, and then at the end you can do it again.
Yeah, so if somebody out there has moved, they want to do a group online, they want to bring it into the community, I'm happy to donate that. My email is Leslie, L-E-S-L-I-E, at rechargethegame.com, R-E-C-H-A-R-G-E, thegame.com, Leslie, L-E-S-L-I-E. At rechargethegame.com. Please reach out to me and I will just send you the link on over. So I'd love to do more in the community. And at the moment, you know, I got wiped out by the pandemic for 2 years. Nobody was using things in any facilities. I also have games that were used in schools and organizations, and everything went away. So it's quite a challenge to build things back up.
Yeah, that pandemic did kind of like put everyone on back, even to now, it's not fully, everything's not fully in place again, but at least a lot of it has gone back to the natural. But these programs that you do in the prisons, are you allowed to do it in is it groups or is it individuals? How does that work?
So the beauty of my work is I specifically design these games so that anybody can facilitate them. With some maturity and some sensitivity. So mostly people just buy them and they use them. I give out a free facilitation guide with basic guidelines. I email that to everybody who purchases the physical game. And For the most part, no, I don't do trainings. People just, the prison systems, the reentry divisions, the workers, you know, the different areas, just purchase them and use them. And it's evidence informed. We did research at Camden County Jail with a control group with hundreds of people. And they found that people who were using it had much better social emotional well-being. So, you know, that makes sense, right? It's not a place where people have these very vulnerable, very reflective and transformative conversations. And with the game, they do. So, yeah, they're designed so almost anybody can facilitate it.
Interesting. I've never heard of a game like that. I've never heard of rehabilitation like that. But, you know, that's why I emphasize this all the time. These contracted providers that they have within the penal system, to me, it's not working. It's mm-hmm. people on the outside that are coming out with programs like your program and others. Even as Donna Winant, she is the founder of Families, Friends, and Individuals of the Mentally Ill. And Donna Winant, she's from Massachusetts, and she has been working with a committee that's been talking to hospitals outside the penal system to possibly get involved in going into the prisons and doing the independent, because this is what we need. We need people like yourselves. And I think the incarcerated individuals will feel a lot more comfortable, you know, with programs like that than the programs they're either not receiving or they're not appropriately receiving behind those prison walls.
I mean, I think we know that so many people in prison are very creative and just very creative people, right? They've had to be coming from so much lack, mostly. And so they need creative solutions, right? Not just these top-down things that are, you know, brought in because they're cronyism, which is unfortunately for the most part the way it works. And
you mentioned it.
Yeah,
you mentioned something, and this is very important, too. Oh, he needs the number.
Text him the number. Go ahead. I'm listening to you, Leo.
Okay. You mentioned these people behind those walls that have suffered some kind of traumas in their lives, you know, some kind of unfortunate situations that have happened in their lives. And it's true. A lot of these people that are incarcerated, and this is why I always emphasize the fact that people should not stereotype. Because all situations are different. And there's a lot of them who have been through childhood traumas, adolescence. You know, look, they just came out with this ban on the Roe versus Wade. You know, it's unfortunate because they talked about a 10-year-old child that was raped. And Jeff is on with us. I'm going to put him on mute right now because there's noise in the background. But the thing is, a lot of people don't realize that these people go into prison. They're victims as well as those on the outside, many of them. Not all of them, but there's many that are. But a lot of them, they don't realize their potential until, as you mentioned, when they get in there, they start using their artwork. They start using their poetry to, you know, pour out their hearts. And this is where they find out that they're very talented. Many of them are very talented and skilled. They didn't have to go to prison. What they needed was their psychological and, you know, the emotional support, which many didn't get. And this is why it's so important for what you and Jeff are doing. So, Jeffrey, I want to real quickly welcome you on the show, too, again.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm becoming a regular over here. Becoming a regular.
It's such an honor because you're so well-known around the country, probably globally by now. But with what you and Leslie have been doing too recently, and well, not recently, for some time, in partnership is also awesome. So I wanted to have both of you discuss some of the things that you've been doing and also the things that have been, Leslie pretty much said it, how you came together. But if you can just talk about some of those issues too. I am going to put myself on mute and let you and Leslie take over. Thank you so much.
Well, I'll let Leslie go first, and then I'll mention, you know, how I'm helping her with those things.
Well,
but go ahead, Leslie.
Jeff, I spoke for 20 minutes already, and I did.
I see.
Yeah.
Understood, Leslie. Yeah. All right. So, look, I mean, so in terms of recharge, you know, we've been you know, we're just getting the game out there in prisons. I mean, you know, we've been in touch with New York State Department of Corrections, and, you know, they bought some games, both Recharge and our long sentence version of it, which is basically the same thing as Recharge. It's just that instead of questions being posed in the past tense, reflecting back on your days of incarceration, it's present tense. So that's definitely been a major thing, because we really would like to get Recharge throughout the New York State prison system, and just continuing to make initiatives to try to get Recharge into additional facilities in other states. It's already in plenty of them, but, you know, our ultimate goal is to be in all of them throughout the country and really throughout the world. And that's really the beauty of Recharge is, you know, just a matter of a lot of countries speak English, and then other ones that don't, just having the questions translated into other languages and, you know, ultimately, like, you know, 2.0, 3.0. I mean, it's kind of a never-ending process, which is really what Leslie's gift is, you know, in this area. So those have been that's been a lot of what we've been up to, as well as getting Recharge utilized in various reentry organizations. People have group discussions with them, and also the gear questions sometimes are used as like a stimulus when they do like journaling, you know. So lots of different ways that Recharge is being used in the reentry space. So, you know, working on continuing to get Recharge out there that way.
Jeff, real quickly, can you say the name of it again? Because, Leslie, I don't think you mentioned the Recharge. But
yeah, Recharge Beyond the Bars Reentry Game.
Okay, that's the name of it.
Yeah.
That's the name of it, yeah.
Thank you.
So let me just say a few questions. I think that would be helpful, right, for people to hear a few of the questions. So
yeah, let's play a couple rounds, Leslie.
Okay, but I'm going to do the I'll answer it from my perspective. Okay, so Jeff, how did the experience of prison help you or not help you grow as a person?
I think it helped me in that it helped to develop my determination and the idea of setting goals and, you know, just continuing nonstop no matter what it took in order to do that. Certainly, I don't think I would have learned as much as I did. Like I read, like from 1998 forward, I read like three or four nonfiction books a week. So I learned a lot from that. I feel like I learned a lot more from that than I ever did in the formal education, getting the bachelor's, master's, or law degree. So I think those are positive things, and just the art of thinking for other people, just staying away from people that are on the wrong path, that are, you know, around people that are not about positive things, you know, just by way of preventing things. So I think that those things are positive. But on the other hand, I mean, there's definitely a gap between the emotional intelligence, the emotional psychological versus my physical. So I'm 48 physically, but I still feel like I'm 26, 27, you know, emotionally, psychologically. So I would say that definitely was a hindrance.
Yeah, and I would say, of course, right? You don't get to go through all those growth experiences of work, jobs and relationships and all those things that if you weren't incarcerated, you go through and you learn from and you fall down and you grow from, and, you know, you don't, people who are incarcerated for long periods of time don't get that. And that's something that's not addressed much and is so, so important. Right, Jeff?
Yeah, 100%. That's extremely important. And, you know, it posed significant life obstacles to me during my earlier years of being home in terms of like I had to do things I never did before. Like I hadn't had a driver's license. I hadn't lived alone. I had never went shopping before. Even just getting my own mail and balancing a checkbook balancing a budget rather and writing checks. So all those things made those activities harder for me.
Right.
Can I ask, He just mentioned something. I'd like to ask a quick question. Jeff, you said even though you're older, you still think like very young. What are your, and Leslie, you as well, what are your thoughts on the age of maturity, the responsibility that they speak about so often? What are your thoughts on the age limits? They just went up to, I think, 21. But I've read in many articles where it's been 25 and sometimes more.
Mm-hmm.
The age of responsibility.
I think 25. I mean, 25 and up, engaging in a criminal act, and that's different than somebody prior to that. I think, it was always a mistake to charge kids as adults. You know, people 16 and 17. But I dare say that even at 21, even through 23 and 24, I think that people aren't always as far-sighted. You're not quite as mature. You're more prone to being spontaneous and bad influences and not thinking about the bigger picture. So I think that the cutoff should be maybe like 25 in terms of differentiation.
Go ahead,
Leona.
No, I was just saying, I read that, the same thing that Jeffrey just said. I read it in so many, with neuroscience, scientists and others, but that's what I wanted to say. But anyway, go ahead. Putting myself back on mute.
No, you're right. I mean, the brain doesn't really understand consequences, especially in males. It's a little different in younger in females until 25. And if you're growing up in an environment where there is violence is normalized and all these kinds of things are normalized in some environments, then you really don't understand the consequences. So I did recharge with adolescents at Rikers Island. I did a bunch of groups, and it was interesting. I mean, some of them at 18, 17, 18 were really able to reflect and engage, but there were a lot of them who never had care, who never were talked to or talked with, who had no idea how to communicate, and they couldn't engage in it at all. So they were probably more like 6 or 7 years old as far as being able to reflect, communicate. Of course, not their fault at all. You know, I'm sure a lot came from foster care, home to home to home, never having that space to develop and grow these I can't really call them skills, but communication, reflection, these things that we do with practice and become part of us. So yeah, it's a big issue.
There are two issues that I have. First, with the media, also with the parole board. They always seem to say this person or that person showed no remorse. And I say, how do they know what to look for? They're not professional. They're not psychiatrists or psychologists, and they don't know how people respond. I mean, I can feel guilt without showing any kind of remorse. I can feel remorse without people identifying with it, because everyone has a different way of showing remorse. Mm-hmm. And
it's really subjective. I don't think that there's any universal behaviors or words that signal remorse, you know. And then on top of that, if you're just going to base it only on verbal, I mean, it doesn't take much for people to just like lie, right? So I don't really think that that's helpful. I think the better barometer is trying to measure rehabilitation based upon disciplinary record, completion of educational and vocational programs, and, you know, things that have to do with self-betterment. I think that's more reflective of a rehabilitation, which is a key component.
But I noticed too, a lot of times there are prisoners that are denied. There are prisoners that are targeted and deprived of participating in any programs, which is another thing. And I also wanted to bring up one of the things I noticed, and Jeff, you probably would be able to answer this one. In the prisons, when they diagnose, when they do these evaluations, a majority of these people get diagnosed with antisocial behavior, when in fact some of them have been so traumatized as children that I would think that they would have post-traumatic stress syndrome. Mm-hmm. But by diagnosing them with antisocial behavior, it makes them look worse to others. And I don't know if you have had any experience in that area or seen any of it or heard about any of it, but this happens a lot with prisoners. And doing national work at one time, I noticed that a lot of prisoners get diagnosed with the same antisocial behavior?
Well, I think that it's a comment on that. Number one, the people that are doing these diagnoses, they're having very limited interaction with the people they're diagnosing, and then number two, they're in an unnatural environment. It's in a prison. Like to know, like, exactly how many times do they even have to meet and interact with people in order to even have sufficient data to, you can't pretend that this is the same thing as meeting with a client on the outside. And I just think that the unnaturalness of a prison environment, you know, the safety and trauma and all the other terrible things that go on in there, I don't know how that variable can be taken into account when trying to analyze, you know, what kind of behavior someone's showing you when they're interacting with you. They don't know you from anywhere. You're part of the system as far as they're concerned. And really, in reality, you are. I mean, how many mental health professionals maintain their professionalism and treating patients/clients as people rather than just getting run down by the prison culture? And, you know, these people are, you know, less than human.
I'm glad you said this, because I've been a social worker for over 40 years. One of the things that I can, and Leslie, you can confirm this, when we were evaluating, when we got cases, we had to do a 30-day evaluation, a 30-day assessment. We had to meet with the families or the individuals, the adolescents. We had to meet with them for a whole month to determine, you know, what the situation was and if they, you know, what type of services they need. This is what these people get diagnosed in a prison, as you just mentioned. What do they meet with them, 1 or 2 days, if even that?
I don't know. I don't know how they come up with these, or what the time frame. I have no idea, actually, how they do that in the prisons. Jeff, do you know?
No, I'm not. Honestly speaking, I haven't even really thought about this issue before either. I mean, I remember that when I first entered the state system, there was the mental health evaluation, you know, at a reception center. But beyond that, I don't ever remember being evaluated. I mean, with the exception that when I was getting close to going to the parole board, then I met with a mental health person. But that was like a one-time meeting. And from what I recall, that was less than an hour.
Exactly.
And that was how they were going to complete the mental health portion of the eval that they were then going to send to the parole board. Right. Because, you know, and they even intimated that your mental health condition was something that was going to be factored in by the parole board, that they wanted this information and that this is why the eval was. And even that's bizarre to me because, you know, thinking about it now, I mean, what are you really saying? Are you saying that if somebody's mental health diagnosis is not up to snuff, then that's going to be a reason to keep them in prison? If someone has a mental health issue, how is that going to help things? Isn't that actually
exactly
going to make it worse?
They should know that they need treatment. But I think what's even more tragic about it is once you're labeled with something like that or given that diagnosis, that has a very profound impact on
it
how
is.
You self.
Exactly. It's terrible.
Right?
It affects these people.
Right. So if they were to say, you know, you're wonderful, you know, I mean, it, that would have a powerful effect in a positive way, right?
There's so many.
Right. Well, you know, but also the whole thing, going back to the mental health for just a quick second, but that almost reminds me of how a significant portion of the inmate population, and I can't say the numbers. I don't know the numbers, but I know that there's a significant amount of people in prison that, you know, when there was the movement of closing a lot of the mental health facilities where people were being held inpatient to be treated, when a lot of those places were closed, people were just turned out on the street, and a lot of those people ended up being incarcerated again, you know. So I just want to bring that part of it up. I mean, when I was an inmate, I saw people that had really significant mental health issues. I mean, people were talking to themselves out out loud. Some of them, you know, we're not having good hygienic practices. One person, you know, was kept in their cell because they were in trouble all the time for breaking different rules. But they were saving the food trays, so they would have like a week's worth of food trays. And, you know, it just struck me that there were people that were incarcerated that really needed to receive mental health treatment rather than being incarcerated, and that clearly the incarceration was not helping, that it was actually exasperating. And then some of them were taken advantage of by the other prisoners, or, you know, mistreated by the guards, and it just seemed like a very sad situation.
And it still goes on.
Yeah.
You know, I saw something on Facebook about almost a year ago. You may have seen it or heard about it. But they had a prisoner, an incarcerated individual in solitary for 650 days. And when he came out, he came out barking like an animal. You know, we have an epidemic in this country of addictions and mental health illnesses. And all of them are getting thrown into prison. A lot mm-hmm. of them on restrictive housing units and solitary confinement. And these people don't deserve, I mean, they 15 days, when we talk to other people from other countries about their prison system, it's totally different. They don't have mass incarceration. They don't have all the abuses going on in their prison and all the things that are going on in the U.S. prisons. 2.3 million. And Jeffrey, you mentioned you don't have the stats on, but there's a lot of first-time offenders. Mm-hmm. Regardless of their crime, there's a lot of them, but there's not a lot of first-time offenders serving a life sentence. I mean, that should be serving a life sentence. And they put them all in there, regardless of whether they're serial killers or terrorists or first-time offenders, or even like yourself when you were in, wrongfully convicted. You know, that's...
Yeah, you know, exactly. Well, while I was speaking to that point, and I'm glad you mentioned it, you know, I don't think it's a good idea to have people who are incarcerated for nonviolent crimes to be like such as drug usage, for example, or petty crimes that a significant portion of which was caused by having mental health issues. I don't think it's a good idea to have people who are nonviolent to be incarcerated with people who have violent crimes.
No.
And then even as to the people that are incarcerated for violent crimes, I could even divide them. I mean, there were people that I met that were there for violent crimes but were choosing to not continue in that way in their prison life. And then there were other people that wanted to continue to be violent. So housing everybody together is what I'm getting at. I think it puts people in compromising positions where now, you know, you may have to fight. You may have to be violent to protect yourself. So I don't agree with doing that. And then there's, you know, vulnerable members of the inmate population, whether people with mental health issues like we were talking about, people incarcerated for sex offenses, or people who otherwise are vulnerable. I don't think that they should just be kept in the same, all housed together. And certainly people that were going home soon, like there were quite a few people that went home from a max. So that meant up until the day in which they went home, they were incarcerated in the same prison as people with another 20, 30 years or that were never going, that were that, you know, were never going home. And that's extremely dangerous.
It is. And I also believe that they should have single cells. I'm totally against double celling because there are, you mentioned some of them, the hygiene and everything. There are some in prison without a tattoo on their body that are very meticulous, clean, and in all the years they've been in, and to be forced to try to, and I think it's totally it's wrong to force people to double cell, and I think it's totally wrong to mix gang rivals, and this is what they do in California is a prime example. They put these gang members, they put them out in the yard at the same time, and it's almost like I say a gladiator type thing that's going on.
Well, you know, I can speak to this. I agree with you, and I want to quickly add, you know, I was forced to be in a double cell for about half of the time of the 16 years that I did prior to being exonerated. You know, I can tell you there's no privacy. And when I was out of myself or, you know, for a program or any reason why I was outside of my cell, it's possible that when the, you know, the mail was brought, the person in the cell with me could have gotten their hands on my mail and opened it. You know, there's no privacy as far as, not privacy, but I'm saying there's no real way to secure your personal belongings because it's just in one area. You know, out in the open, and you know, talk about letters and pictures, and you know, the most dreaded aspect of double bunking, other than somebody may attack you when you're sleeping, is you know, when you have to use the restroom. You know, it's you know, I remember in New York State, they made double cells by welding one bed on top of the other. I mean, this was a cell that was originally constructed for one person, and so to gain prison capacity in the cheapest way possible, New York State simply had welded one bed on top of the one bed on top of the other. There were definitely, you know, fights that used to happen in cells, and that was dangerous for the COs too. The Correction Officers Union is against double celling because a lot of times when a fight would break out in a cell, they have to go in the cell to try to break it up, and sometimes the two combatants would then turn on the guard. They both would turn, they'd forget about fighting each other and start fighting the guard instead. So a lot of lots of problems with that. And the other problem I want to quickly mention is there really is no positive outlet for processing, you know, thoughts, emotions, pain, proactive rehabilitation. And that's one of the things that I'm really, you know, that motivated me from the very beginning to partner up with Leslie is Recharge's application inside the prison system, because there are no programs like I'm talking about that allow people to process that. And I think that it helps people not just in processing, it helps them maintain their humanity, to not buy into the inmate culture, the positive, negative aspects of that. And you know, there's really nothing else like it there. And you know, that's why I'm happy that we do have gotten some headway into some of the facilities, but we need to have more, because look, it's not like they have alternative programs. You know, they don't.
No.
Yeah, it's such an, and well said, Jeff, thank you. It's such an affordable, so easy to implement solution. It's kind of crazy how incredibly hard it is to get it into places. But that's, you know, that goes to show how inhumane the whole system is. But there's a lot of noise.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Somebody's got a speaker on, I believe, maybe. Okay.
There are a lot of people fighting to try to make the system more humane, and it just doesn't seem to go very far. The structures are so in place on almost every level to make them inhumane, and I don't know what it's going to take, you know?
What you're doing and what Jeffrey's doing right now is a big start. And, you know, the programs are unique, and the person partnering with you has not only, and I say this with Miriam Jacobs, a psychosocial from Netherlands. She's doing a book, but she also has been in the Florida prison. She's been doing volunteer work in the prisons, in one of the prisons in the Netherlands. So she not only is doing it, but she also has experience. She's seen it for herself. In Jeff's case, he was wrongfully convicted. He saw a lot of things while he was in. He came out and he's doing something about it. These are the things that have to happen. We have a lot of people that come out of prison. They say they're going to do so much, but when they come out, they go in opposite directions, and you don't hear any more about it. But there's also one recently. His name was Sean Drumgold. He was wrongfully convicted. He got a major suit. He came out, and he recently died. But there's a lot of suicides in this country. There's a lot of suicides throughout the country that are occurring in the prison. And some of them, I'm sure, are not even suicides. They could be homicides. But this is a major problem as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's unimaginable, right? I mean, most people are incarcerated and they end up in homeless shelters, back into prison. It's a cycle. And, I mean, how do you – I think almost anybody would go crazy under those circumstances and turn to all kinds of behaviors they wouldn't think they'd do, right? So that's just common sense.
But things need to change. They do need to change. you know.
Can I ask another question, Jeff?
Of course.
While incarcerated,
of course.
Did you ever speak to a person who would never come home?
Yeah. Yes. I spoke to a couple of people that never went home.
And what did you talk? Did you learn anything from them?
I learned that they really struggled just to. They struggled to have hope, and they felt frustrated because they felt like they were, you know, that they had significant growth, personal growth, and that they were a different person now than what they were when everything happened. And yet the fact that that would mean nothing, but that, you know, that they would still stay in prison and, you know, and talk about, you know, this guy had like a son and their family. I mean, that really, I learned that aspect of it.
That's powerful.
So now that I've interrupted on all those other issues that you were talking about with your game, can you talk more about the game and where will you be going from here? Expanding the program, adding new programs to it?
Yeah, so I just said New York State is piloting right now 5 of the long sentence, 5 of the reentry. Hopefully they'll buy them for all the 44 prisons throughout the state. It's already throughout a number of states, but it took many years to get into New York State. So thank you, Jeff, for that. So, and we're hoping, you know, to get it out to families. So when people come home, they can connect right away with their families. I'd love to raise money to do a family board game with the new family version. So because, you know, the intergenerational trauma, there's a lot of families who have intergenerational trauma around incarceration, and be able to heal that and heal family relationships. I mean, what's more important, right, when somebody comes home? I mean, of course, work and housing, but as far as being a human being, those relationships are what keep people on track and give them resilience and give them strength and hope and support. So that's what we're hoping to do. You know, it's a struggle, and I think a lot of people who've been incarcerated just don't come proactive in mental health for so many different their own mental health for so many different reasons, and the traditional methods of going into a therapist's office, most of them don't understand anything about the experience of incarceration. Probably have biases, totally understandable. Somebody wouldn't want to go that route. There's very little else that's available. So, I mean, I wish I had the bandwidth and the money to get, you know, have formerly incarcerated people just go out into communities, go to homes, be able to run groups in the communities. The game is a therapist and incredible conversations. I've done a lot of workshops in maximum security, incredible conversations, incredible support starts happening right away. So, you know, maybe down the road we'll have enough money, we'll have enough, you know, to really get this. I did create a document, Reentry Heal, Hope, Empowerment, and Love Reentry Support Groups, hopefully to do nationwide down the road. So maybe my remembrance loss game will garner enough money to start going further down this road. Jeff, you want to answer that?
What's the question?
Where are we going?
I mean, yeah, like you said, I mean, look, we're in terms of where we're going. I mean, we want to get recharge, you know, the long sentence version throughout the New York State prison system, and we would like to get it into additional. We would like to get into all the prisons around the country. That's certainly something we've talked about that we aspire to, but also what Leslie was saying, you know, whether grant money or other donors, just which would enable us to hire formerly incarcerated people as facilitators of groups. I mean, that's also something that we aspire to. I know that Recharge right now is evidence informed, but you know, having it fully evidence based is a goal that we've talked about happening within, you know, future years, and we think that can potentially open up additional doors for us to get into places where we can't right now.
I'll tell you, I hope you do. And I will say, one of the things that you could probably do too, there's a lot of individuals in college, in the universities that are going to school for law and going to school for psychology and social work that would be dying to work with you, to volunteer with you, to gain their internships, to get the experience, whatever. So if you were to go national and you were to go through the universities across the country, you would be not only helping the incarcerated, but you would be helping these people that are going to school for these types of titles, and they would be helping. And that way you would have the people you need to be working with you if you did expand throughout the country. But that program, it's just awesome. It's never been heard of before. I've never heard of it. Never.
Yeah. Thank you very, very much, Leona. That's definitely something to keep in mind and hopefully act on soon.
I would also like to add that I interviewed, and I'll be interviewing him again. His name is Brian Winters, and he was a former legislative member in Vermont. And he started, he's not anymore, but he started the American Union. And I would love to have you connect with them, and also Society First out of Florida. These are organizations that are really doing, trying to do the same thing. They're trying to improve the mass incarceration in the country and the criminal justice reform. So connecting with them is, and they could probably try to work with you in getting into some of the prisons in the states that they're in.
Wonderful. Could you do any introduction, or we want to talk about one?
I can introduce. I will send them an introduction. I'll send them your information. And can you give the audience your information, both of you, right now?
Sure. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, so so in terms of recharge, I mean, get the email. I think it's www.rechargethegame.com.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that's in terms of where they can get more information about recharge, order it, see the reviews and all of that. In terms of connecting with me, I can be emailed. My email address is jeff@deskovic.org. Alternatively, people can go to my website, www.deskovic, that's deskovic.org. There's an email form that people can email me from.
And again, my email is Leslie, L-E-S-L-I-E, rechargethegame.com. Jeff, I think there's another from you.
The speaker.
Yeah.
For now,
okay.
No.
And I would love to hear from people. Again, happy to donate a link to the video visitation family game, which can also be used in the community, which is also in Spanish. It's in both Spanish and English.
Awesome. I have been connecting. Matthew Fogg out of Maryland, he is a former U.S. Marshal, but he was running he came in late, though, for governor of Maryland. But one of the things is I've been trying to connect all lawyers or all organizations, you know, and that are doing things like yourselves. I've been trying to connect all of you around the country because, like I say, it's very important. Just like I was saying when we first started the show, I belong to like 42 groups on Facebook, which right now this interview has gone out already to all of them. But I and also in Messenger. But I try to, even with the advocates and the families of loved ones and everything on Facebook, I try to connect all of them because even though they might be in the state of, say, Georgia or Florida or New Jersey or Ohio or whatever, a lot of people have relatives in other states. You know, a lot of people are connected with organizations or whatever in other states. So even though we are dealing with state prisoners a lot of the time, they're not federal, but at the same time, being connected is sharing information and resources. And this is very important, I think. And this is why I like to connect everybody with other people. So I'm going to be sending the information to Brian Winters and also to some of the other groups and everything that are out there. And I'll try to get you all connected because I think what you're all doing is awesome.
And thank you very much.
Right now, Jeffrey's already known all over the place. You just mentioned Jeff, and everybody said, "Oh, I know Jeff Descovet. I'm aware." He's just loved by everybody. And I'll say, really, Leslie, you have done a lot as well. And I'm glad that you and Jeff are working together, because sometimes I say we can learn a lot from others.
Yeah.
You know, and that makes such a big difference, because the experience that we gain, the knowledge that we gain, we can help others to do the same thing. And that's how positive change is made. So we have another 5 minutes. I want to let you and Jeff finish up, and then we will end this and hopefully have you back at a later time.
Okay, so Jeff, what should we do? Do you want another question?
Yeah, let's do one more. Yeah, why don't we do an example of a non-geared question? We did geared questions, which are meant for formerly incarcerated people to answer, and then everyone else dialogues with them. But we also have many more questions that are not geared questions, that are just regular questions. So why don't we do a non-geared question? Why don't we want to play around
with
us?
Yeah, okay, so let me explain that as well. There's a mixture of questions about life and the geared questions about incarceration. So that's why you can play with friends, with family, reconnect, because all the questions, and there's about 200 of them in the game, are about life, where everybody answers. So let's see. Give me just a second. And there, some of them are funny and some of them are deep. So if you could have been born anywhere in the world, where would it be? Why?
Okay, who wants to answer first? Leslie, you want to answer first, and then I'll go second.
Yeah, I don't know. That for some reason popped at me. I don't know if that's the best question, because some of them are very deep. But this one is, there's some that are just more fun and creative. And
So I'll answer first. I would say if I could have been born anywhere in the world, I would prefer to have been born right here. Because, look, I think that there's, as we've talked about, there's lots of issues here. But I think in this country, but I think especially around the justice system. But I also think that there's a lot of positive things as well. I think there's a lot of opportunities here that don't exist elsewhere. I believe there's lots of chances to just be agents of change and influential, and opportunities to do that. I mean, I certainly value the free speech we have in this country, and the ability to, you know, assemble and protest and work for change. And I dare say we would not be welcome in a lot of the third world countries that have dictators. If we were to try something like we're doing, we probably would be killed in the streets at some point.
Yeah.
So I would prefer to have been right where I am.
Interesting. I, at the moment, don't know that. I'm actually thinking of where I want to live. I've been in the city 47 years, New York City, wanting a different kind of life. So hard to say. I'm gonna have to keep thinking about this. But I love what you had to say, and that really, I hadn't really thought about that. You know, I often do think, as a woman, we have the freedom to start a business, even though there's an enormous amount of gender discrimination, there still is a lot more opportunity for women here than in most of the world, which is an unfortunate thing to say. But so I love what you had to say, Jeff.
I want Hawaii.
Thank you.
You know what? Maybe I'll go there with you. Yeah, that would have been for them.
I interrupted so many times today that there were a lot of questions I'm sure you didn't get around to. So I would love to have you and Jeff come back on again in, say, a few weeks, a month or so, if you would
I'd
be willing
that.
To.
Of course.
I would love to have you both on. And there's so much more to your program I would like to listen to and to have the audience listen to, because it helps. It helps a lot of those incarcerated. It helps the loved ones. And It just makes so much sense that these are the things that are needed in the prison.
I would like to do more of the family questions as well, and have Jeff, you know, have us all talk about more of the family situation and dynamic. Jeff, how does that sound?
Yeah, I'd love to do that. Yes,
that would be great, and then we can try to get some family members on, or get some formerly incarcerated individuals on. But I want to thank you both once again. You've been a blessing, and I want I just wish you so well with this, and I hope that you are able to, at some point in time, expand your programs, expand these to some of the other states, even if it's just surrounding states, you know, to start. But it sounds so successful, and I think it's so much of what these incarcerated individuals need. There's a lot of them have lost hope, and with this pandemic, a lot of them have been confined to their cells for 22 to 24 hours a day. A lot of them are indigent, so they can't even buy, you know, food or books or anything like that beyond what they already have. So it will be so good to have programs like this that are available to them.
Fire under me, Leona.
I'll tell you, it's something that is really needed, and I hope you both continue. And there's a lot, Jeff, I know there's a lot of things that you've been doing that you haven't even mentioned, have even touched base on today. But hopefully that we can pick up more on this at a later time for both of you.
No, I would love to do that. It's just, you know, like when I do interviews with Leslie, you know, I mean, I like to try to focus in on recharge. I mean, in general, I do get a lot of media and new media opportunities, you know, but, you know, I don't like my criminal justice reform advocacy to overshadow recharge. So I kind of walk that balance. And, you know, I do think that what I'm doing with Leslie is so, you know, incredibly important. And as I've articulated on other interviews, you know, my participation, my involvement in recharge is kind of like paying it forward and an appreciation of old timers, prisoners that helped me along the way while I was incarcerated, and in some of the people that are on parole but doing the right thing on the outside. So that was kind of my way of trying to give back to that population, having taken something from them, having benefited something from them. And certainly that's something that, you know, goes beyond guilt, innocence. It just is about being human.
Exactly. And if you have a brochure, if you have anything, if you can put it on my Facebook page, and I will get it, I will share it with everybody going far and wide. And there's also on WhatsApp, there's a One World Family, which shares a lot of information throughout the week. So if you can just put anything you want to get out there, just put it on my Facebook page, and I will definitely make sure it gets out to everyone.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. It's been such a pleasure, Leona.
Thanks, Leona. And, you know, appreciation of your advocacy and your radio show where you highlight, you know, what Leslie and I were talking about, but also many other issues and many other exciting guests, even when I'm not involved. I see the program and, you know, I will share this episode and, you know, encourage people to tune into you, you know, every time you do this, even when I'm not involved, because there's a ton of great stuff, great material. And listen, there's not really very many other places, many outlets that are covering this material, you know. So I just want to express our admiration for you and your work as well.
Thank you so much. I am so honored to have you both on every time. And I look forward to the next time. Thank you so much, Jeff. And thank you.
So
you take care. And thank you.
All right, have a good one, everyone. Thank you.
Everybody, thank you for listening.